Hello, Heather.
Hello, Ferg.
And hello, listeners.
Hello, listeners.
Are you superstitious? Because today is...
Day 13, unlucky for some.
But hopefully not for our cast of A Christmas Getaway. New Old Friends is brand new farce, which opens tonight at Theatre or Bath's Ustinov.
Ooh, that is exciting.
It is.
This is the first new show we've created since the start of the pandemic, and we are really proud of it. It is running until the 8th of January, so plenty of time to make a trip and see the New Old Friends nonsense live in the flesh.
Newest New Old Friends, do you want to say something on that? No, she doesn't. Okay, we love live, but we value you, our remote listeners, too. So, NofQuiz?
Hashtag NofQuiz question 13. What is the name of the family in A Christmas Getaway, our live theatre show, which opens today? We will allow Googling for this one, obviously.
Right, enough pluggery. On with crimes, clues, and Christmas.
Ding, ding.
Ooh.
Crimes, Clues and Christmas, Chapter 13.
So, Ms. McConstance, began O'Ralby. He had set up an impromptu interview room for his less formal conversations the previous day, but now he had commandeered one of the lesser dressing rooms high up in the building. The ensemble members who had been displaced had been placated with the promise their cooperation would be taken note of when they were next seen for a named role. The room was relatively spartan, nothing like the luxury of Daisy Love or Rudy Lightfoot's quarters. There was one quite meagre mirror with no glamorous bulbs surrounding it. The desk was plain wood, and there was barely enough room for the three wooden chairs and small table O'Ralby had requested to be brought in. The inspector and I were sat on one side, and Chaz was on the other. The effects of our morning conversation, and perhaps the sugar from her Bakewell tart, were still holding up, and she was looking much more like the woman I'd first met. She'd done something to her hair to bring it back to life, and her eyes sparkled playfully as she glanced at me. "Can you explain exactly how you came to be in possession of the whereabouts of the stolen jewels?" continued O'Ralby without further preamble.
"Oh, I've been through this once with Mr. Artridge,"
replied Chaz, throwing a smile towards me. "Mr. Artridge's reputation as a fine investigator is established, but, be that as it may, he is not a representative of Her Majesty's police force. So, if you'd be so kind as to humour me, Ms. McConstance..." There was the briefest flicker of doubt or annoyance that danced across Chaz's striking features, but it passed quickly, and she gave the inspector a tight-lipped smile.
"Of course. It was obvious to me from the moment I heard they were missing, Inspector. Daisy was the only person who could possibly have taken them."
"That's not strictly true, is it? There are many other people who could possibly have taken them. Isn't that right?" needled the inspector, putting emphasis on possibly.
"Well, yes. Sorry, you're quite right. It was a turn of phrase."
"If you can stick to the facts, please, ma'am." Here he looked at me with a half-raised eyebrow. "We'll leave the flowery language to the poets, eh?"
"Understood."
"So, with that in mind, could you tell me again how you knew the stolen jewels were in the deceased's dressing room?"
"Okay, if we are to only talk in facts, I don't suppose I did know it."
"But Mr. Artridge here says he was following your tip. That's right, isn't it, Mr. Artridge?" "Well, amongst other aspects of my investigation, Ms. McConstance's tip certainly was a factor in my searching Ms. Love's room, yes."
"The deciding factor?" probed the inspector.
Yes, probably." He turned back to Chaz and rested his elbows on the table, steepling his hands in front of his mouth.
"Well?"
"From the moment the jewels went missing..."
Were stolen,
I thought it was most likely that Daisy had been the one to take them."
"And why's that?"
"Frankly, because she deserved the cash. When Barrington decided on a whim to swap her in for Marlena, I, along with everyone else, assumed she would be put on a wage equal to, or at least close to, what Marlena was on. But Eldridge and Dot between them insisted that she'd signed a contract to dance in the season, and she was still dancing in the season. No reason to renegotiate."
"Do you often disagree with the management and your colleagues?"
"I wouldn't say often."
"But you do think of them all as contemptible idiots, isn't that so?"
Chaz realised that information could only have come from me, and shot a look in my direction, as though I'd done something unspeakable with a soft toy at a family gathering. Why was O'Ralby going for her like this?
"You don't need to answer that, Ms. McConstance. Yesterday, I was able to have one of my colleagues take a look at the bank statements of everyone who works here."
"What? You can't do that."
"There's been an unexplained death, ma'am. I can use all means necessary. It is kind of you to have been so concerned about the financial straits of Ms. Love, when you yourself are in quite staggering amounts of debt."
The debt isn't really mine. I helped my father out of a sticky spot he got into at the dog track. I'll pay it off in no time.
You'd pay it off a darn sight quicker if you could sell some expensive stolen jewellery.
Like I told Artridge, if I wanted to steal them, I could have easily replaced them with the fake ones, and no one would have been any the wiser.
Perhaps. You also got a handsome bonus for reworking all the costumes from Miss Schweinvolger to Miss Love. A second set of alterations would have made a nice dent in your arrears. By now, Chaz had totally lost her cool. She'd run her hands through her hair so often with such gusto, it was wild on top of her head. She looked desperately at me, begging me with her eyes to interject, but I was at a loss for anything to say. I tried in vain all the same. I say, Inspector, are you accusing Chaz, Ms. McConstance, of killing Daisy simply so she could make some new costumes? I'm not accusing anyone of anything just now. But, for the record, where were you when the sandbag fell, please, ma'am?
I was on stage, not 15 feet from Daisy. I can still hear the sound of the impact. And if you think I had anything to do with it, you're a monster. Both of you are.
I'm just doing my job. Thank you for your candour, Ms. McConstance. You're free to leave. She stood up quickly, toppling her chair backwards as she did so, and slammed the door behind her as she left. I turned to the inspector.
Bloody hell, O'Rowby. That was a bit rum. Do you really think she could be the killer?
Listen here, Artridge. That rope didn't sever itself. Somebody meant for that sandbag to fall, and it cost Daisy Love her life, whether it was planned or not. I'm going to explore all the options, and I don't care if that gets in the way of your damn libido. You understand?
But...
No buts, Artridge. This is serious. Now, fetch in Barrington. He's next.
It may have looked to the untrained eye that I meekly accepted the inspector's chastisement and failed to plead my or Chaz's case strongly enough. But I assure you, I had any number of devilishly clever comebacks and put-downs at my disposal and simply understood the gravity of the situation and graciously allowed O'Rowby to maintain the illusion of control. Yes, sir, I replied, which tallies exactly with the strategy above and is not the timid answer of a cowed weakling. I retrieved the director, Michael Barrington, who was today wearing a much more understated ensemble, consisting of a black polo neck jumper, a pair of check knickerbocker trousers, and a black beret into which he'd swept all of his hair so that, if one didn't know, one would assume he was bald. On top of this, though, he'd swaddled himself in a truly enormous grey scarf, not unlike the one Daisy Love had been cocooned within during our brief chat prior to her horrible end, but this scarf was bigger still. Indeed, I think it could have provided the bedding for one of those large Catholic families who pop out great hordes of children, seemingly incapable of mastering the rhythm method. Sometimes I wonder whether they aim to win any sectarian schisms just by sheer weight of numbers. More foot soldiers in God's great army, even if the feet of those foot soldiers is encased in adorably tiny little booties. I've become distracted by Catholic contraception, or lack of it. It's probably the presence of O'Rowby's accent that caused my mind to wander.
Mr. Barrington, please, take a seat, he commanded without getting up when Barrington and I entered the small chamber.
Shall I come round and sit next to you and leave this free for Mr. Artridge? Smiled Barrington, completely at ease with the brusqueness of O'Rowby's instruction.
No, thank you, sir. Just there's fine.
Oh, I know, darling. Just a little joke. A very little joke. More of a jokette, really. Which reminds me, no fabulous jacket for you, Mr. Artridge? Very drab. I greatly admired Barrington's style and had been most pleased when he complimented my dress sense yesterday, so the comment was cutting. But I didn't want him to let him know he'd severed a sartorial artery, so I primly replied, I just thought giving the tragic events a more muted palette was called for.
Moi aussi. Look, no adornments of any kind. But I don't see why I can't look good in mourning.
I'm afraid we're not here to discuss Mr. Archer's shortcomings as a dresser, Mr. Barrington.
Hey!
I cut in. But O'Rowby shushed me with a wave of his hand.
This is serious. Someone died on the stage downstairs yesterday.
Oh, darling, you obviously haven't been here for the Conservative Club's annual comedy competition. Countless souls have died on those boards.
Mr. Barrington!
Snapped O'Rowby. Yes, sorry. I'll behave. He raised his eyebrows at me.
She doesn't play, does she?
I'm not in a playing mood. What can you tell me about your relationship with Daisy Love?
Barrington sighed and dug underneath one fingernail with another.
Daisy was a sweet girl, but I think it was a mistake elevating her to prima. She couldn't handle the pressure. I was constantly having to water down my choreography, and she was more concerned with getting paid than getting it right.
She was a risk to your reputation, then.
My reputation is ironclad, Mr. O'Rowby.
Iron rusts, Mr. Barrington.
Well, there's nothing rusty about me, sir. I keep it well-oiled, believe you me. Even working with a substandard prima, my work is still of the highest order. If she was substandard, why did you pluck her out of the chorus? I interrupted. O'Ralby glanced over at me sharply, but then gave a little nod. It wasn't entirely my decision. But anyway, Marlena had become... unworkable. The inspector took back over. How so? Things you wouldn't understand and I can't explain.
Artistic things?
Sure.
Mr. Barrington, you are hardly cooperating here. And a woman is dead in suspicious circumstances. I have multiple witnesses that tell me you were the one that told Daisy Love to stand in the spot she ultimately died in and were quite forceful in telling her to stand exactly where she was.
O'Ralby's outburst visibly unsettled Barrington. He pulled off his beret and teased at the hair underneath, frowning and blinking.
Sorry, just let me process this. You are accusing me of killing Daisy.
I'm not accusing you, just reminding you of the seriousness of the situation.
I need no reminding of the seriousness of the situation, sir. I have a sold-out ballet, and I'm down one prima ballerina. A situation which doesn't benefit me one iota, but it does benefit Marlena Schweinvolger. I'm sure I don't have to tell you. Are you suggesting Marlena cut the rope?
I couldn't stop myself from asking. O'Ralby glared at me for interrupting.
Not as such. Marlena wouldn't dare go up on the grid. She's terrified of heights, like me.
Nothing wrong with that, I added.
But you might want to have a word with Keiki. Up there is his domain, and he's always been mooning after Marlena ever since she arrived.
The only mooning I could imagine the hirsute Keiki doing was the type which involved baring one's bottom, and I wished I couldn't imagine that.
In my mind's eye, his dark hair covered both buttocks like the heads of two furry animals pressed together in thought.
Where was this Keiki at the time of the incident? Asked O'Ralby.
I couldn't tell you. You'd have to ask him.
Actually, Inspector, I saw him a few minutes before. He was heading towards the stage area and he was in quite a hurry.
Really? Well, he never appeared on stage. But I suppose he could have gone up either of the ladders in the wings and I wouldn't necessarily have spotted him.
Did you see anyone up there after the sandbag fell?
A sandbag had just fallen onto the head of my prima, Mr. O'Ralby. That sort of thing rather draws one's attention, I'm afraid.
Am I free to go? I need to think about how I'm going to re-block the show and rehearse Marlena back in.
You're going to carry on with the performances and put Marlena in after what you just said about her.
O'Ralby couldn't believe what he was hearing.
The show must go on. The show will always go on. Crimes, Clues and Christmas is a New Old Friends production, part of the Comedy Whodunits For Your Ears podcast series. Written and performed by Fergus Woods-Dunlop and Heather Westwell, with sound and music by Fred Riding. New Old Friends gratefully acknowledge the support of Arts Council England in making Comedy Whodunits For Your Ears.